RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to our Gene Technology Bill panel. The Gene Technology Bill will be introduced in the House, first reading due today, Tuesday, as per the order paper. And joining us for our Gene Technology Bill panel this morning is Jody Brunning, trustee at, of course, Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility. Morning, Jody. Thanks for coming in again.
Good morning. Thanks for this opportunity to talk about this.
John Carapiet is back with us, spokesman, GE Free NZ. Hi, John.
Hello. Thank you.
And Guy Hatchard, the Hatchard Report, and, of course, Campaign for Global Legislation Outlawing Biotechnology Experimentation. Morning, Guy.
Good morning. Good to see you, Paul, and everyone.
Good to see all of you. So this bill will be introduced to the House first reading today. Jody, you want to kick off then? What happens? Do we know?
Well, this is part of the problem. We can only speculate about when will happen, what will happen, and how quickly they will aim to push MPs to vote on this and to move this through the House. So we really cannot be sure at the moment.
It goes before select committees as part of the process. Do we know which committee or which committees?
It's a mystery. It's an absolute mystery. And remembering that this is legislation that will impact on the environment. It's being led by the Ministry for Business, Innovation and Employment, the Economic Growth Ministry. Now, the older legislation or the currently existing legislation under the Hazardous Substances and New Organisms Act is administered by the NZEPA and the Ministry for the Environment, from what I believe. And so it's unsuitable that MB would be controlling this process and leaving us to speculate on what particular select committee might be selected to push MB's favourite legislation through.
Also, the introduction of the bill was first reported by the Science Media Centre. That was last week. Before any press release ahead of that formal announcement, there was no actual media coverage in the subsequent days, which is kind of odd, you'd think. Yet organisations like Plant and Food were made aware, so that everyone might have an opinion on this. It's kind of very selective. Science Media Centre is usually the toe in the water to get the initial message out, isn't it? And they know that probably Science Media Centre are cooperative, can I put it that way?
Well, if you look at the Science Media Centre comments, I mean, the first thing you'll notice is that there's a range of issues being raised and also obviously a lot of support from people who end their comment with conflict of interest revelations. But, and I guess that's what's behind this bill entirely. There's been very little wider consultation with even farmers or the wider community or Māori. It's been with select, you know, little panels of people that have been selected to inform the decision-making on the bill. And some of the people who were on the advisory technical panel were the people being quoted on the Science Media Centre. And to be fair, these are the people with a vested interest, and they are revealing that. But they've had a huge influence on what's coming through in this bill. And I guess for me, it may go to the Health Select Committee, I'm not sure. But for me, it's a couple of lines in the introduction to the bill, which is about 150 pages, and it is a bit of a turgid read, and there's lots of information and detail in there. But it's a couple of lines really early on that actually make this major exclusion of a whole set of gene-edited techniques and products from them, from any regulation at all. So this is the furphy. So we can absolutely discuss the actual problems of what is in the bill, but it's what's being excluded from the bill, which really goes to the heart of, and certainly from my view, and you know, I really appreciate the Guy and Jody have got a more scientific and more informed view from that broader range of issues. But mine is from a kind of public interest consumer view. And the consumers all over the world, in Europe, in America, in surveys, and recently in New Zealand, the University of Auckland just did a quick report recently showing that people want these new breeding techniques, these genomic techniques, these new precision breeding techniques, as they're all called, basically CRISPR-Cas. They want them traced and labelled. Now, even the Europeans have said they'll do that. And the fact that that's being excluded from this bill entirely, and it's not just plants, by the way, it's animals, it's microbes that are deemed by the companies producing them to to be essentially like may have happened through mutagenesis or naturally in the environment, which is a complete scientific furphy. But that's the basis of excluding all of these products. So without traceability, the consumer has no choice. The farmer doesn't know what they're buying. The whole system of each genome and the integrity of each gene pool of a species that is open to this unregulated gene editing will slowly be changed over time, or maybe quickly, actually. So there's a real kind of wild west, I think. Dr. Heinemann called it on your program the other day. Certainly, just through that lens, just through the exclusions, let alone this very much more permissive regime that is being set up to kind of give one person, who's the regulator, a lot of power. The minister can still direct that regulator, by the way, so he's not completely independent. And a lot of like things like, oh, and we'll have partnerships with overseas approval authorities and pick up what they've done. Now, at the moment, it sounds quite good in the bill, you know, work with our partners. But it could easily end up being rubber stamped by two overseas organizations in other countries that are seen as being legitimate by our regulator. And suddenly you've got overseas authorities who are not as robust and, in fact, probably they're not as robust as they need to be, and neither are ours. But that opening up of approvals from basically because they've been approved in other countries really starts to unwind our independence, you know, maintaining the non-GMO production sector. And again, there's no protections. There's no requirement for the regulator to follow the precautionary policy. There's no requirement for them to keep even a record of the new organisms that are being created. And there's certainly no requirement of the regulator to protect non-GMO, organic and natural environments, because the change in this law is taking away prevent and manage risks to just managing risks, because the current law says you must prevent the risk, and they're saying, oh, that's too much caution in the world, let's go gambling with everything now to have the removal of the precautionary policy.
I want to get on to the risks, the upsides if there are any, but the downsides. Just want to stay on the mechanics of the bill for one moment longer, Jody, perhaps this is for you. The introduction of that bill is likely to have to get through fast track bill, that's still being read, and then amendments to the Resource Management Act. Changes to those could be key, given that GE free carve outs like Hawke's Bay and Northland are under the RMA and will be removed from it, so regions cannot opt out of the new bill in their long term plan. So, do you think the fast track bill is being lined up to push this through under that, do you think?
Well, possibly. Remembering that Judith Collins, who's the Minister for Science, is also the Attorney General. So we've got a big problem here in that the policy has been secret, the policy has been hidden. We now can only speculate again what's going to happen. Remember, this is a lawyer that's been an MP for 20 years. She really knows her way around government, cabinet, and policy. So she's going to actually work this legislation as quickly as she can, as fast as she can. And MPs who really can be bamboozled by her claims relating to, oh, everyone else is doing it, when in fact we know that a heck of a lot of countries are paused, or, you know, such as the European Commission. So I think we need to just understand the reach of Collins through this, but the fact that she's the Attorney General, and that I don't believe this is, as I wrote in the Daily Telegraph, I do not believe that it's appropriate at all.
Conflict of interest.
I would argue
potentially
that.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. And no regulatory impact statements are coming out of anyone else except for MB. And why does Biosecurity NZ actually understand the extent, the degree and reach and the potential for adverse effects in the environment? We think that they can only be in the dark, or they can be being led by the sciencing, because the science is all hidden inside the claims around safe and effective, which the words she would use would be risk proportionate. So that's their safe and effective sort of narrative, and evidence-based.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, all those claims are hidden in the Australian legislation, which Guy will probably you know, outline a little bit more about what they see as being comparative. And there's no need for risk assessment for so many of these organisms because they're same as naturally bred ones.
All right, Guy, there's your cue.
Well, a couple of days ago, there was an article in The Guardian. I'll give you the headline. Unprecedented risk to life on Earth. Scientists call for halt on mirror life microbe research. These are people working in biotechnology to produce a new kind of microbe with right-handed nucleotides. I don't need to go into all the details of this, but I think the interesting feature of this concern, and this, by the way, was as a result of a report signed by 38 of the world's leading biotech scientists. The interesting feature of it is that how did this concern originate? Well, Dr. Kate Adam-Muller, a synthetic biologist at the University of Minnesota.
You mean not a real one?
No, well, yes. She was working on this project to produce a mirror cell along with scientists all over the world. But then she changed her tack last year, but only after studying the risks in detail out of some sort of curiosity. And then she discovered it was a risk to life on Earth. In other words, researchers all over the world have been busy starting projects without considering the risks. And the scary side of this is the fact that tens of thousands of biotechnology projects are in the progress without any adequate risk assessment. Now, our legislation, this is how I read it, it kind of says, your short version, instead of 150 words, we can put it all into one sentence. It's a sort of gentleman's club agreement. We're all jolly fine, knowledgeable fellows who have high aims and unimpeachable standing, so we should be allowed to do whatever we think fit.
Hubris. That's what that is, isn't it?
It is. And I think, you know, this is a kind of a post-pandemic thing. The post-pandemic thing should be, biotechnology can't be contained. It can spread everywhere. It can kill millions of people. What went wrong? Goodness, this needs controlling. And instead, it's kind of, anything goes. There was another article in The Guardian a couple of days ago. The headline was, "It's game over for facts." How vibes came to rule everything from pop to politics, you know.
Yeah.
If I feel it's okay, it must be. And that's how I read Judith Collins and this legislation, actually.
Yeah, but it was worse than that. I'm going to bang on and about it again. The only people I've seen publicly promoting this are the Prime Minister, her, and David Seymour dressed up cosplay in labs.
Yeah.
They're the only ones.
And I have to, finger Winston Peters too.
Has he endorsed that as well, has he?
Well, his public meetings promoting are saying, we're loosening up farm regulations so you can get into new technology. So
okay, I missed that one. Well, him too. But he wasn't in the white coat in the lab pretending to be a lab technician and doing the sales job.
The ag newspapers, the CRI, the Crown Research Institute scientists that get the funding from MB to do the biotechnology research, you've seen all three CRIs that have fund, at least three of them, which have potential funding in the ag newspapers for the last 3 years fairly persistently. And so the voice of farmers and the organic sector and other people that might not agree have sort of been drowned out because these guys are scientific.
Can I make a comment about the, you mentioned, Jody, the MBIE reports and stuff. I mean, they really are worth a look. The bill itself is enormous. But if you have a look at some of the documents that surround the bill and how it came about, you do start to see some really concerning kind of decisions that are being made, like the direction to remove the precautionary principle from the bill. That direction was publicised a few months ago, that the minister had done that. The minister made other directions as well as the bill unfolded. But the bottom line of the MBIE reports was they actually say, look, we haven't had any time to do this. In fact, some of the comments on the Science Media Centre were from scientists backing it, saying, oh, you've done this really fast, guys, well done. Well, well done to get a very complex piece of legislation into Parliament, but that isn't really fit for purpose, not least because of those exclusions I've already mentioned, let alone what is in the bill. But the big thing is that they said, oh, so because it's been so rushed, we haven't had a chance to do, now listen to this, guys, we haven't had a chance to do an economic analysis. So this major, preparing the country for the next 30, 40 years with this future-proofed legislation, which is deregulatory in its approach, giving the regulator full-on powers plus the ministerial, directorial powers. But they haven't had a chance to look at the costs and the benefits. And more than that, the bill also removes the requirement of this regulator compared with the current one, at the APA, to consider things like benefits. Because they're not well equipped to consider benefits, says the ministerial papers. So they don't have to consider benefits and risks and economic impacts. So there's a lot of things gone on behind this bill. But as I say, it takes away protections that almost any New Zealander would expect to be in place. Like, you know, you've got to protect non-GMO and GE-free environments. You've got to protect our markets, which is saying you've got to label even these new genomic techniques products. You've got animals now in the firing line because, as it's been explained, it looks like the most deregulatory regime in the world because it's excluding these gene-edited animals, plants, microbes. I mean, I think microbes, and I'm sure Guy might agree with this, but genetically engineered microbes should not be allowed to be released anywhere because they are completely uncontrollable. But I would hope that it may not happen, but if this bill goes in as it is expected, I can't see how some MPs in those government parties can't think of saying, no, look, we won't have its first reading. I'll vote against its first reading, take it back to the drafting board, engage with farmers, engage with organics, engage with exporters and the community. But they should cross the floor on this one. Now, they're not going to have any guts, I know, but they should. Because there's
and wait for Europe's decision.
Purely on that basis.
And wait for the European Commission's decision, sorry. Because that's paused right now. That's frozen because they're wanting so many carve-outs and protections that we need to think about what are they going to do? Can we follow them or shall we race to the bottom like, the, you know, North and South America?
Well, it's quite clear that the market, so I mean, like, this is it. One of the things that the bill does, and I think we said that in the GE-free press release, is that some of the biggest losers are farmers and consumers having that right to choose taken away. But the exporters are really going to have to fight to secure the system from GE contamination, unless the regulator is required to do that. And they're not at the moment. And so they've already said to the industry, you're going to have more costs on securing your pipeline of clean, safe food. Now, that's what the global markets are asking for. So the underpinning of this bill is actually a real gaslighting of the market. And really, basically, we're about to see market failure. If we do not label and trace deregulated gene-edited products through our food system, we're going to be losing our point of difference, which is kind of like trust in New Zealand, because we've got traceability and a robust system as better than many. So if we take that away, because that's what this bill does, we're really going against the consumer in our export markets. They're saying they want them labelled. And I think that Europeans, even if they say they're safe, they'll say traceability and labelling has to be part of it. And so, and that's what the retailers in Europe are saying. So I don't know what Woolworths and Foodstuffs are saying here, but they sell a lot of organic and all their own brands are non-GMO, very similar to European supermarkets. They're saying you've got to trace and label these new breeding techniques. And as I say, that's the big first rung of the problem. They've exempted those, let alone what they are going to do into the future. And I'm sure Guy will talk about the future is even more complex. You know, you were hearing from Professor Heinemann, you know, aerial spraying of gene edited products into the field. You've got the convergence of nanotechnology, synthetic biology, AI to create new organisms. You've heard of all this before. That's what this bill opens up. And it's one person, the regulator, who's really going to make any decisions and able to make subsidiary legislation that says, oh, we're not going to even regulate that anymore. And we're not going to regulate that anymore. And we're not going to regulate that anymore. And that's the journey and the trajectory we're now on.
Absolutely. It's crazy stuff. The whole thing is crazy. I mean, the articles in, you know, recent articles in the UK Telegraph and US Washington Post saying that the risks of biotechnology experimentation are greater than the risks of nuclear war, and we're deregulating biotechnology. It's just doesn't make any sense. We are so, one of the things Collins is saying is we have to get in step with the rest of the world. Well, this is going to take us out of step with the rest of the world. And quite frankly, you know, the Royal Commission on Genetic Modification 2001 had 450 pages of submissions and consideration, and they adopted a precautionary approach. None of that discussion is invalid today. In fact, it has only become more serious. The risks have become more serious. And I defy anyone to come up with a systematic way of quantifying the risks of biotechnology. There's nothing in this bill that lays out how you assess a risk other than saying, oh, well, we're going to exempt this and this and this and this and this because, you know, whatever, they're very exact or something like that. But these are not scientific principles. It doesn't matter how exact gene editing is, because genes are multitasking, any genetic intervention or modification has off-target and unwanted effects. Doesn't matter how exact it is. It's, you know, these are all PR ideas. They're not scientific ideas.
You read PR ideas. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
They are. And it's a kind of madness here that is going on that, as I say, I put it in the context of post-pandemic. It's a sort of, I'm a girl because even though I'm a man, I'm a girl. You know, it's that's the kind of logic that's involved here. I can assess the risks because I'm sure I can assess the risks. I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to do it. And you can be sure that whoever is appointed to do this will be an industry insider who will just simply be, a rubber stamp person. That's how these things work. They always have worked that way.
I don't understand how you could be so confident with so many unknown things that could have huge consequences and could end up being very bad for people, which you will have to wear eventually. Doesn't seem to be a handbrake at all. Can anyone explain that? Anyone thought about that?
There are no handbrakes here.
I tend to see a pattern, and the pattern is the moving to deregulate these, CRISPR-Cas technologies and so on through consistently, at least in the English-speaking world. And we know that the deregulation is happening in trade agreements, so they're building in clauses in trade agreements. So this I see is rather a push by the biotechnology sector through MPs, through cabinet, and through trade agreements. And it's really interesting because, for example, Simon Ray, the policy director for Emerging Technologies, EMBI, said it's good regulatory practice to remove the precautionary principle.
Now,
the
How could you say that?
Well, Simon has that statement in an OIA.
What's Simon's background? Do you know what Simon's done in his life to know that? Do we know that?
We know that, well, he's in emerging tech with EMBI. And we know that the precautionary principle remains enshrined in European law. They're mentioning with regards to the precautionary principle in their current what's called the new genomic technologies legislation. We know that's in the Kyoto Protocol and other important treaties. I have sent an Official Information Act request to Ray to understand how Ray came to that conclusion. But that sort of language, to me, comes directly from the biotechnology industry, as well as for example, in EMBI's 2024 regulatory impact statement. They say that decision makers should take, saying that we should take a precautionary approach is out of date. Now, that is biotech propaganda 101.
Why is it out of date? I mean, it's the obvious. It's timeless, isn't it? that principle?
We don't understand how quickly the tech will speed up. We don't know how quickly the tech will roll out. We don't know what is around the corner. So a precautionary approach is actually appropriate and remains appropriate.
There's a lot of rogue operators here. There are a lot of people doing wild experiments. There's a lot of military involvement. There, you know, this is a sector which doesn't want to be regulated. It's the same all over the world, that biotechnology doesn't want to be regulated because any regulation will hold up their wildest dreams. And I had a quick look at that report that John referred to from Auckland University about, and they said that the public at large is kind of not well informed about biotechnology. One of the things that is common sort of coin in the public psychology is that biotechnology is already here. There are lots of projects that have already come in and benefited us. And that's kind of misinformation that's out there. So there's no sense of worry. Why isn't it in the papers? Because no one has any real sense of worry about what might happen.
Right. Because we've avoided the bullet, or the multiple bullets that the Americans and other countries have had because they had a very deregulatory approach. I mean, some very important things that springboard off what Guy said. I mean, where are the successes overseas, even with the new gene-edited products that we're missing out on? And again, the survey says none. I mean, the non-browning mushrooms, which I think we even mentioned in our vision, are kind of like they failed on their market overseas. And don't forget that first, you know, the hornless cow that was launched to market, gene-edited, you know, hero, and then turned out to be contaminated with other genetic material that wasn't supposed to be there. So we know that these things are happening. And even recently, there was a report showing, you know, unexpected changes through CRISPR-Cas9 in a particular use. Actually, it was a very interesting paper. It was about using it for therapeutic purpose in humans, to change a couple of letters in the gene alphabet, as it were. But the particular letters that those were located turned out to have some pseudogenes that were similar. So the CRISPR changed all three, the actual gene, but the pseudogenes, which had a different effect on the organism. So we are playing with really complex systems. Not to play devil's advocate, but to recognize what's going in their mind, when I say their, the ministers and other people's mind, they see the reason why the precautionary principle has to go is because it's slowing adventurous innovation and risk-taking that will benefit. But the fact that there's no economic basis on which to say there's going to be an actual benefit and an actual loss to other people or the environment, that's the biggest problem to start with. But the changes that are already being made by the Food Safety Authority, and it goes to what Guy was saying, we're talking about redefining things. Now, whether that's gender or anything else, we're talking about redefining, well, this genetic engineering isn't going to be called genetic engineering. We're just going to call it something else, like new genomic techniques or precision breeding. But we're not going to call it genetic engineering. And the importance of that is because the public, who are not necessarily experts, they do have a kind of intuitive taste, natural products. And everybody, wherever they sit on that pro, mid, or anti-GMO kind of view, everyone agrees it should be the right to choose. So labeling and traceability is key. And that's what's being taken away at the very first stage of this. So we are in trouble because the social contract, that agreement, and the surveys show even farmers who say, oh, yeah, I support having this in our toolbox. The survey asks, and what do you think GMOs are, and how does it work, and what is gene editing? They don't know either. So we're very reliant on the experts, and the experts who are in industry can't be left to be the foxes in charge of the chickens. And unfortunately, that's exactly what's happening.
The interesting thing there is, GMOs, genetically modified organisms, the new technologies of gene editing are GMOs. They're still GMOs. The government is trying to regulate them out of scope, but they are still GMOs. And I think it's one of the things that the MPs could do is they could look at the Royal Commission recommendations, and the Royal Commission recommended a three-pronged approach, including the establishment of a parliamentary commissioner on biotechnology, a bioethics council, and a biotechnology strategy. These were all accepted within that 400-page report. So MPs could turn to that. They could say, let's pause, let's see what Europe's doing, let's consider a bioethics council. So we can talk about, should we be regulating microbes and plants and animals? Should we have a proper biotechnology strategy? So no, these initiatives aren't in place right now. And the other point that's really interesting about that hornless cattle situation was the developers were only looking for DNA from the hornless cattle, but the contamination occurred from other organisms, other microbes that were sort of that they had to sort of cut through in order to do the hornless cattle CRISPR work. So the only reason those other organisms, that other contaminating DNA was found, was because I think it was at the EPA, the US EPA decided for the first time ever to sort of look at what happened, you know, were there other contamination issues? And that was when this signal was raised. Now, if we have all of these new technology of all of these new technologies avoiding pre-market consideration, none of that stuff, none of that cross-contamination, no, none of those other risks will be considered. They will just be ruled out.
Well, I've got some recommendations. I think, you know, I'd add a few recommendations. Like, I think the government should put in place a special training for, so we have more mortuary experts and more abattoir experts post this deal. Doctors need to sort of reflect on the lessons of the pandemic. You know, these lessons were bought with millions of human lives.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're proposing that they're going to take more human.
Well, I confronted Judith directly with that. I said the gene therapy, which was the COVID injection, has been a disaster. Disaster. And she went, oh, well, you might think you know a few people. That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Human gene editing is outside the scope of this bill, just to be.
No, but well, the point I was making is, if you're going to assure me that it's safe and we can trust you, that shoots it out of the water. We can't trust you. Nothing you can say is trustworthy.
Well, that's why you need regulation. It shouldn't be reliant on someone saying, trust me. It should be regulated and framed.
Well, look what happened last time.
Well, that's
like
true.
Guy just said, I mean, doctors are already used to excess deaths. They know.
In this bill, it's actually quite early on, there is mention of the Convention on Biodiversity, which has got precaution in it, but it's like not mentioned in our bill. But it also has emergency approval of medical uses of genetic engineered products. It's actually called mandatory emergency approval of GE. This is, so it seems to be
mandatory
emergency medical.
For medical, yeah.
So a medical might be therapeutic. So, I'm not an expert in these things, but I have read the bill.
Neither are they.
I have read the bill, and I'm reading the bill. I'm saying, oh, okay, so therapeutics and medicine could be a therapeutic to change the physiology of an animal or a plant, a human. For example, like methane reduction in the gut could be deemed a medical intervention because of the therapeutic mention. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but there's lots
and
lots in there, including the emergency approval of medical uses. As a mandatory for the, and the minister's got enormous powers, and you'd think even Judith, but anybody in that ministerial role would be saying, oh, look, I've really got to look out for the country.
Well, they're not normally that bright, are they? So I don't know if I trust.
They're going to have the power. And so if it's the wrong person in that role, they're going to have a lot of power to direct the regulator to allow this or to stop it. But what if they say, oh, no, let's allow this, which is definitely the direction of the bill. So let's put our bets on that in the current government and any future government like this, the minister will be saying, oh, no, go ahead, guys, don't even worry about it. I mean, I'm sorry, I exaggerate. So they will worry a little bit, but they're not worrying enough because they haven't done any economic analysis. And then they've even thought about the non-GMO. And it's not just the organic export sector, but the non-GMO export sector is huge and growing globally.
Yeah, and they don't care about that.
Well, so why not? Why not?
Yeah, good question.
Because
someone tell me.
To be finding a middle path, not a transfer to the biotech industry.
I mean, Jack Heineman told us that they never talked to him. We've had other people who haven't been consulted who are experts. They've got subtle renaming or re-describing terms, using new words to take the heat out of what the legacy terms mean. It's a setup. That's what it is.
And it's also fake, you know.
Isn't it?
this idea of proportionate risk. Well, proportion is actually a mathematical term. You have to proportion, compare one thing to another mathematically. There is nothing, no provision in their bill for that. I mean, they're just going to set up some stooge who's going to say yes.
We'll have some advice before he says yes, or he or she yeah. will get advice from a technical committee, and even Māori have a little committee, but then the minister directed that in this new model for Māori consultation to not have any decision-making power like they do now on plant variants. So it's very, very dodgy for all, I mean, in fact, our press release said farmers, consumers, Māori, animals, because as I said, these animals... I mean, worry about the microbes, absolutely. The animals will be open to the deregulated gene editing techniques, and that could be extremely cruel. And the minister excluded any ethical clauses in this bill. So there's some real big issues, because don't forget the past. We have had 20 field trials, 9 releases and approvals of GMOs in New Zealand so far. And one of the trials was the poor old cows at Ruakura who had to be euthanized because they started maturing prematurely, their ovaries started exploding as calves, and they had to be killed off compassion. Now, that's under the current regulations of animal welfare, and the minister, I think she said it on your program, you know, we're not having animal ethics or any ethics in this bill because animal welfare things are covered by other committees. Well, they haven't worked, so we've really got animals in the firing line coming in the future too.
And remember, it can't be risk proportionate because no risk assessment has been undertaken in New Zealand. Yeah. Also, John is talking about history, and that report is on the GE Free New Zealand website. So I think it should be easy to find on that website. Now, I'd like to ask Guy a question. We understand that the microbiome is really important when it comes to health, when it comes to the immune system, and when it comes to reproduction. So if we're giving cows a vaccine that is altering their methane and it's altering their digestive system, how can we understand the risk to that cow, to the health of the offspring, and to future generations, and to the immune system and of that cow, and whether that cow will live as long, because dairy cows are very expensive, you know, $2,000 to $3,000. If a cow doesn't live as long because its microbiome's not as robust, will that be a cost? So, I mean, I'm just speculating here, Guy. What would you take of that impact?
In humans, the microbiome is linked by the vagus nerve. And in the microbiome, there is a huge exchange of genetic information that goes on. It's sort of genetic exchange hotspot. And that is closely linked to our health. So what you eat is what you become. And if you are changing the composition of the biome, as they are with these new products that have just started to come through for cows, you're going to be changing their health. And they haven't really assessed that. And I mean, just for information, one experiment on 4 cows, 2 had to be taking Bovaer, this feed supplement which reduces methane. They had to be euthanized early. And there was no concern about it. You know, it was kind of, oh, well, you know. And that's what no regulation looks like. Even if they do tests, it doesn't matter what the results are.
For our exporters, or for any brand, it looks worse than that as well, because I don't know whether you know, but in the UK, there's been a huge consumer backlash when they found out this product was being used in a mainstream milk supply. Some of the supermarkets were getting it from Arla. I think it's Lurpak was the brand that was been like boycotted, because it's very interesting. Put the consumer at the center, even of the promises of changing animals or changing production systems to meet climate change goals. The consumer wants that to be ethical and done in a way that meets their other tastes for natural, sustainable, ethical, agroecological, organic, non-GMO food. That's what the consumer markets want. And when industry says, oh, we're going to fix up our footprint by doing it this way, and we're not going to tell the consumer, if and when the consumer finds out, you get a backlash. So even in Australia, I think Coles are now discounting the meat that's produced from some cows that were fed this bovine thing, because people found out. And again, you could say, well, make sure people don't find out. Well, that's exactly what this bill does. It makes sure that people are not allowed to know that a product that is a gene-edited product and not traced through our system and not labelled. And as I say, it's not just poor old New Zealanders who are going to be denied this choice. The markets overseas want this choice. So again, this lack of economic analysis of how to navigate a middle path for New Zealand and the denial of labelling and traceability of these whole sections of new genomic technique products is an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to destroy traditional farming as we know it.
And our brands, and our brand exports, and the capacity to meet the demand of the growing market. All of these things are in the frying line. And it's integral to the exclusions of the bill, let alone what the bill does. The bill's got some interesting things in it. It's got a restriction on the who can sell a benchtop DNA sequencer. And it says, you know, it's an offence, I think, that if you have have one or sell one and you weren't authorised to sell it. So, and there's a very nice, slightly comforting, but absolutely nonsensical when you think about it. There's a whole set of breaches of the rules and fines for individuals and companies that breach the rule and excuses if you didn't know you were breaching the rules or something happened or it was an emergency. Lots of caveats. But the whole thing looks like, oh, this is a really good, robust system. But it's not going to be because in the first place, they don't have any requirement for financial fitness. So you could fine a company out of existence very easily and have nobody to pay the money. And that's happened before in New Zealand. So the PPL sheep.
In 20 years, the CRIs who have got 20 years of funding from the government, they've never had to do a return on investment analysis to understand whether they made money. Now, another thing we haven't talked about today that's quite important is the Food Standards Australia New Zealand are currently going through a deregulatory proposal or process at the moment where they aim to completely take away process-based assessment and move that into renaming GMOs to do a lot of this shuffling about to exclude a lot of GMOs. A European study looking at the way the amount of GMOs that would be taken out of pre-market regulation concluded that about 94% of food would be taken out of regulation through this process. And as we keep saying, the data is really clear, and farmers in New Zealand need to appreciate this. When they ask, you know, people in Australia, China, France, USA, Japan, Russia, Vietnam, so, you know, Asia, Europe, throughout the world, people will pay a premium for GMO-free product. And we've just seen in the last week or two a Canadian salmon, GMO salmon farm go bust. People do not want to. And the literature is actually very supportive of the people not wanting to eat it and paying a premium. So we cannot dismiss or downplay that. And so when you take into account the Fasan's fight, you know, the Fasan's moves would result in 94% of food being excluded, it's very disingenuous.
All right, coming up against time, so probably a good time to get folk activated into being in a position to make submissions when select committees do their thing. G3NZ has something on the website, don't you, John, to help out there?
We've been campaigning even before the bill came out because we already had the heads up to say, well, there's no precautionary principle, there's no regional G3 zones, that's a Hawke's Bay goodbye, Northland goodbye, no traceability of these excluded gene-edited products, no liability or strict liability on GE users, all of the regulators to prevent contamination, no ethics, no protection of non-GMO exports, no economic analysis. I think there's enough just there for people to start submitting on this bill. But of course, as Jody and Guy have said, you know, the exclusions and it being out of scope is already starting to make it impossible for people to actually push back. I would like to see MPs cross the floor on this. that they can't all be completely blind to the complexity of this bill, the fact that it's being rushed, the fact that there hasn't been consultation, and the enormous implications of it for our economy, because it's really taking us away from the market trends to a biotechnology trend with really specific benefits to those segments of industry and against the public interest. But at the end of the day, and as I say, I'll go back to a consumer view and let Jody and Guy give a more, you know, sophisticated view. But the consumers say they love GMOs, hate GMOs, don't know much about them. The right to choose, traceability and regulation is a fundamental part of the deal, of all of this. And the fact that the minister's taken that away, I think should be an alarm bell for everybody in New Zealand, wherever you sit on the spectrum. This cannot be allowed to stand. You've got to regulate these new genomic techniques and trace and label them.
Guy, final words from you.
Oh, I predict if this goes ahead as it is, you know, sort of similar way overseas, basically, that by the end of the decade, we will suffer a massive catastrophe and loss of human life. This is so risky. And top scientists are starting to warn like this. Our government's completely out of touch. Tell your MP, you know, use the resources that are available from us, from yourselves, Reality Check Radio, from GE Free New Zealand, and start lobbying your MP. That's all we can do in this situation.
Jody.
I echo Guy. I do believe that people need to communicate to MPs at the extent to which this regulation is different and the extent to which the European Community Commission is currently pushing back on the extent of regulation. PSGR.org.nz has information as well. I think we've got to be talking to MPs before the Select Committee process, because Judith Collins will disappear any discussion around risk proportionate issues and evidence-based issues as being already settled, and that we can only talk to the content of the bill, and that'll be very difficult for a lot of people. So I think communicating to MPs is really important.
And the communicating to MPs starts kind of today. There will be a vigil if the bill goes into Parliament today at Parliament. I know people who will be, I'm not sure how many people will be there, but I can tell you how many people they represent. They represent at least 30% of the population who actually quite strongly in surveys support a GE-free New Zealand and food and environment. Mm. They represent probably the 30% sitting on the fence and don't even know this is coming our way. They probably don't represent the 30% who say, oh, we love this, great, bring it on. But if they knew it, they would be much more aware of the issues in this bill. It doesn't serve the public or nature well. It serves the biotechnology a very nice Christmas list gift.
Yeah, if we're just thinking what happened in Tauranga with the fluoridation and the councillors, well, majority voting to fluoridate the water, they knew all the information because I hammered it into Mahi. He knew it, they knew it, and they still welched. You know why? Because they're worried they might lose some money personally. So this is who you're dealing with. So nice try with the MPs. Good luck is all I'd say, because they've got party allegiances and loyalties to think about, and will they get selected for the next thing and all that. So I don't know. Just saying, right? Don't want to be a negative nearly, just saying.
The market will also speak, but that's the big checkup. We're about to engineer, as part of what Jody said, it's going on all over the world, but kind of engineering the denial of choice to consumers, which is what the deal was all about for the last 20 years and is today. So the denial of choice and that exclusion of traceability is such a big issue for New Zealand and the consumers and our exports. So all of these things are now on the table. But for me, taking away the basic right to choose is absolutely the wrong thing to be doing.
Well, potentially killing thousands of people is not so good either. I'll just drop that in.
And there is a history of MPs, busy elected representatives, being sabotaged by officials, and officials make science claims, and those officials will not let those science claims be contested by outsiders. So we know that officials will make the most of the uncertainty of elected representatives, of members of parliament. So we need, the public can help MPs understand that there is other, inverted commas, science, other information other than what's been supplied by MB.
All right. Well, boy, that went quick. I want to thank John Carapiet, GE Free NZ, Guy Hatchard, Hatchard Report, and of course our favourite doctor, and Jody Brunning, Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility. Thanks for coming in and talking about this. I guess we could probably go another hour and get into even more of the weeds, but I think in the time that there's urgency here, isn't it? It's urgent, urgent, urgent.
It is.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.